Radio Prague News.
The Czech branch of Huawei is accused of collecting sensitive data on officials and business people. The Prime Minister says the country will offer two female candidates for the post of European Commissioner. And the Civic Democrats will hold pre-election talks on cooperation with other liberal parties. Employees in the Czech branch of Chinese company Huawei routinely collect sensitive data about officials and business people with whom they come into contact and share it with the country's embassy, Radio Journal reported on Monday. The station found evidence of the practice while examining how Huawei operates in the Czech Republic. Two former company managers, speaking on condition of anonymity, confirmed close cooperation between Huawei workers and Chinese intelligence, despite the company's denials. Czech and Western intelligence services are convinced that to have Huawei roll out national infrastructure, such as the 5G network, would represent a security threat. Prime Minister Andrej Babiš says the Czech Republic will offer two female candidates for the post of the country's European Commissioner. He made the comment in a Facebook post, adding that the Prague government had until August 26th to make a selection. Mr. Babiš did not name the prospective nominees. The Prime Minister said after European Parliament elections in May that the country's candidate would again be Věra Jourová, who is currently Commissioner for Justice, Consumer Protection and Equality. However, some voices in the ANO party have called for the job to go to MEP Dita Charanzová. The leader of the opposition Civic Democrats, Petr Fiala, says he plans to hold talks on possible cooperation with other conservative and liberal parties before the next scheduled general elections in 2021, Czech TV reported. Mr. Fiala said he wished to form a team that would defeat government leaders ANO and carry out reforms in education, digitalization and the battle against bureaucracy. The chairman of the Mayors and Independents, Vít Rakušan, has already raised the idea of building a bloc of parties before the next elections. This call was welcomed by top 09, while the Czech Pirate Party said they would prefer to go it alone. More than 100 people have petitioned the local authority in Prague 3, seeking to have the name of the street Konjevova changed, the news site Pražský deník reported. The street, a key artery in the capital, has been named after Red Army General Ivan Konev since 1946, a year after the Soviets liberated some parts of the Czech lands, including Prague. However, Konev was also the supreme commander of Russian forces during the violent suppression of the Hungarian uprising in 1956. Some residents of the Žižkov district are against renaming the street, arguing that it would involve excessive bureaucracy. Reigning Czech football champion Slavia Prague maintained their perfect start to the new season by sailing past Teplice 5-1 away in the second round. Teplice were reduced to 10 men for almost 45 minutes of Sunday evening's game after Jakub Mareš was sent off. Viktoria Pilsen and Opava also have 6 points from two outings after beating Liberec and Příbram respectively at the weekend. And finally, a very quick look at the weather. Tuesday should be mainly sunny in the Czech Republic with temperatures of up to 28 degrees Celsius. My name is Ian Willoughby and that is the end of the news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Coming up in today's programme, former Huawei employees say that client information was discussed at the Chinese embassy. A veteran wooden Ostrava tram is being spruced up for its centenary. And later we look into research conducted in Moravia, where close ties were found between locals and the ancient Great Moravian aristocracy. All that coming up, so please stay with us. The Czech branch of the Chinese company Huawei is suspected of collecting sensitive data on officials and businessmen through its employees. This material is allegedly gathered during business meetings and subsequently entered into a central database to which the company's headquarters in China have access. Czech Radio's investigative team at Radio Journal broke the story, citing former Huawei employees and Czech intelligence sources. Two former managers who worked at the Czech branch of the Chinese tech and telecommunications giant recently spoke under condition of anonymity to Czech Radio's investigative team, which has been analysing how exactly Huawei functions in the Czech Republic. The company has been under the spotlight due to its bid to roll out the 5G network here and elsewhere in Europe. The two individuals independently stated that aside from business information, they also had to enter personal details into the company's internal database. This ranged from things such as the number of children their client has and their personal interests, all the way to the individual's financial situation. One of the former managers, who did not wish to disclose his identity, was cited by Radio Journal in regards to how this database system worked.
Access to the information, which is stored in this customer relationship management system, is managed exclusively from the headquarters in China. It is very hard to find and prove who has access to this data and what they use it for.
Furthermore, it was allegedly common practice for Huawei employees to discuss the gathered information at meetings with Chinese embassy employees. The source was unable to say whether these were spies. The other source told Radio Journal that their task was to gather information on state officials who were then invited to a conference or on a trip to China.
Officials on the level of department director or deputy minister were always picked out. I was then given the task of entering the personal details of the individual or group that was supposed to come for a visit into a document. This document was intended for the company's Czech management and headquarters in China.
Czech intelligence services have been aware of this practice, which one source says has been uncommon in business circles for some time. In fact, BIS, the country's civilian intelligence branch, conducts special courses for civil servants and politicians on how to protect oneself from these tactics, which can be used by any foreign intelligence service. BIS spokesman Ladislav Šticha says that his service regularly warns course attendees to be very careful at such meetings, because anyone could be an intelligence officer and whatever they say could end up in the hands of a foreign power. Huawei has provided Czech Radio with a written statement denying the use of any unlawful practices, saying that all activities and meetings its employees take part in are subject to Czech and European GDPR rules on privacy, further complemented by the company's internal guidelines. These guidelines were then shown to a Czech Radio reporter by Huawei representatives at a personal meeting. However, the guideline does not only concern personal data protection. In fact, it states that personal details, which the company collects, have to be precise and updated. Those individuals who are of particular interest to the company and whose information is gathered are then referred to as data subjects. Huawei has several times publicly denied cooperating with the Chinese government. However, just a few months ago, in the beginning of 2019, one Huawei employee was arrested in Poland under suspicion of spying. The Polish national was fired by the company the following day. Now, although many people today crave the latest technology, there is a persistent strong fascination with so-called veterans, old-timey cars, trams and buses which appear on the streets and instantly are surrounded by admirers, and the owners of these historic jewels bring them out on special occasions. Ostrava City Transport is now preparing to celebrate the centenary of the oldest trams in its collection. The famed number 25, a wooden model that hit the rails in 1919, cruising the city at 15 kilometres an hour. Brian Kennedy has the story.
At the close of the 19th century, Ostrava was a busy industrial town with a growing number of inhabitants and factories. This required reliable city transport to cater to public needs. The first steam-powered tram took to the streets of Ostrava in August 1894. The journey from one end of town to the other took 42 minutes, and the tram travelled at a speed of just 15 kilometres per hour. At the beginning of the 20th century, the industrial town made a huge leap in technology, getting its first electric trams. The oldest veteran surviving from those times is the famed number 25, a wooden tram that is the pride of Ostrava Transport's historic collection of vehicles. It hit the rails in 1919 and served until 1972, when it was finally allowed to retire. The Friends of Ostrava Public Transport, a group of enthusiasts who are crazy about tram and bus veterans, have been working on it for years so that it can be presented to the public in all its former glory. Robert Janku, one of the group's members, gave Czech Radio's Ostrava reporter, Petr Dušek, a short ride in it.
There are no electronics in the driver's cabin, no electrical circuits. Everything's hand-operated. Here you have a handbrake and a handle that determine the speed. There are handles for the blinkers and lights and also a bucket of sand. That's all there was in this old tram.
The number 25 tram was simple but reliable, which is amply documented by its long lifespan. Its wood-paneled interior was comfortable, more so for some than others. Jerzy Bohacek from the depository of Ostrowa Transport explains that the tram had a VIP section of sorts, something like today's business and economy class.
There was a sash door in the middle of the tram, dividing it into two sections. That was so that the clerks from the ironworks or mines did not have to rub shoulders with the manual workers.
The Friends of Ostrowa Public Transport devote much of their free time to repairing and polishing the number 25 tram to its former glory. Number 25 tram is the most precious piece in Ostrowa City Transport's collection. Altogether, it has 35 veterans and is considering building a museum for them sometime in the future.
If we stop to count all the repairs we've done, it would be in the millions of crowns. Now the number 25 tram is almost ready to be shown to the world, but there are some small details we still need to take care of.
Robert Janku ending that story by Brian Kennedy there. Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it's now time for our main feature of the day. More than 11 centuries after the fall of the Great Moravian Empire, there are still direct descendants from the Slavic noblemen living among us. A study of DNA samples carried out recently by the Moravian Museum in Brno found 11 men from the region of Uherské Hradiště who definitely have a Great Moravian ancestor in their bloodlines. Ruth Frankova has more.
The Great Moravian Empire was the first West Slavic state to emerge in the Central European area on what is now the territory of the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Poland, Hungary and Serbia. It was founded around the year 830 by the Slavic leader Mojmir and was the first joint state of the Slavonic tribes that became later known as Czechs and Slovaks. A recent genetic testing carried out by the Moravian Museum in Brno as part of a larger historical and archaeological survey has discovered that more than 1,000 years after the collapse of the empire, there are still direct male descendants of the great Moravian noblemen living in the area. The study compared the Y chromosome markers, that is DNA inherited from father to son, of more than 340 men with DNA samples of 75 men buried between the 9th and 13th centuries near the town of Uherské Hradiště. Luděk Galuška, the head of the Center for Slavonic Archaeology at the Moravian Museum in Brno, outlines more details.
This research was part of a large project focused on one of the best-known Great Moravian archaeological sites called Uherské Hradiště Sady. In the 1950s and 1960s, a large religious settlement was uncovered here, including a large church and a baptistry surrounded by nearly 1,000 tombs. Around 90 of them dated back to Great Moravia, while the rest were from the 10th to 13th centuries.
According to experts, the settlement was most likely a center of the Holy Moravian Empire and the seat of St. Methodius, the Archbishop of Great Moravia. Methodius and his brother Cyril came to Great Moravia at the request of Duke Rostislav to spread Christianity in this part of the world. They also translated the Bible into Slavic languages. Luděk Galuška says the settlement was most likely part of Velehrad, one of the most important centers of Christianity on the territory of Great Moravian Empire.
Byla to velká rozsáhlá aglomerace, která se rozkládala.
It was a large fortified agglomeration covering around 200 hectares of land. It was inhabited by dukes, noblemen, craftsmen, tradesmen, but there were also representatives of the lower classes, mostly farmers, but also slaves. So imagine an early medieval town with 2,000 to 3,000 inhabitants, which is a big town for the 9th century. It is quite possible that members of the ruling family also lived there. I believe that even Duke Svatopluk himself could have lived here in the mid-9th century, and most probably also Bishop Methodius.
A s ním zcela určitě i arcibiskup Metoděj.
To narrow down the search for possible descendants of the great Moravian nobleman buried at the site of Uherské Hradiště Sady, experts from the Moravian Museum in Brno decided to approach local archivists.
My jsme se samozřejmě spojili s místními archiváři.
We have, of course, contacted local archivists and asked them to search for people with surnames that appeared on the oldest registry offices as far back as in the 16th and 17th centuries. They selected around 15 names for each of the smaller districts. We also preferred people who had some previous knowledge of their family's history and have already traced their family's trees. Many of the people who cooperated with us have really traced their descendants all the way back to the mid-17th century.
Měli vypracovány své rodokmeny třeba až do toho 17. století.
Considering that there are more than 1,000 years separating the great Moravians from their contemporaries, Mr. Galuška says the result of the testing came as a surprise. Out of the 340 men selected for the genetic testing, 18 of them shared their DNA markers with 7 individuals buried at the site. 11 of these men are most certainly linked to 3 members of the great Moravian nobility.
Já jsem v duchu tajně doufal, že by
I secretly hoped to find at least one or two genetic links in the current population that could be linked all the way to the period between the 9th and 13th centuries. You have to realize East Moravia used to be a very restless area bordering with Hungary. It was affected by a number of wars, such as the 30 Years' War, so the local inhabitants suffered a great deal and were greatly affected by all the conflicts.
Mohli dotáhnout až do toho období 9. až 12. či začátku 13. století.
Given the fragmentary nature of written sources from the 9th century, linking the graves to any specific figures is virtually impossible, says Mr. Galuška. Nevertheless, there are other signs that reveal a great deal about the people who are buried in the graves.
Víme ale, že jestliže byl někdo v 9. století pohřben.
What we do know is that if someone was buried inside a church or in its hallway, and he was buried in a wooden coffin with forged metal fittings, he must have definitely come from the highest society levels. That person was probably either a nobleman or a member of the ruling family. Indeed, the DNA tests have shown that at least 4 representatives of the noble society of the time have contemporary descendants. And we also know that one of the noblemen was definitely a member of the ruling society, since he was buried in a special chapel at Satská Výšina.
One of the 18 men whose DNA was linked to that of the great Moravian nobleman is Marek Miklíček from Ostrožská Lhota, a small village south of Uherské Hradiště. He says he only started tracing his family tree after he took part in the DNA testing.
I didn't know anything about my family before. Only after I found out, I started tracing our history and creating a family tree, and I discovered that my family has lived in the same village since the mid-17th century. I was really surprised. I couldn't believe our paternal line has been preserved for over 1,000 years, considering there were several wars and plague epidemics in the region over the centuries.
The testing of DNA samples was in fact just a minor part of a large-scale research which has been underway for several years, looking at archaeology, history, anthropology, as well as other fields including nutrition, health and genetics. The Moravian Museum in Brno is cooperating on the research with experts from the medical and scientific faculty of the Masaryk University in Brno, the criminal and archaeological department of the Academy of Sciences, as well as a genetic lab at the Michigan University in the United States. Luděk Galuška of the Center for Slavonic Archaeology says they have come across many interesting discoveries over the years.
Zjistili jsme třeba i takové věci kolegyně z archeologického ústavu, že ti příslušníci.
We have discovered, for instance, that the upper classes enjoyed eating sea fish. This might seem unlikely for a central European region, but there were various ways seafood could find its way to the table of the great Moravians. First of all, there was extensive foreign trade, but sea fish could also find their way into the large rivers, such as the Danube. The Slavs could have also eaten salted herrings, because salt was a regular commodity. We also know that they ate a lot of meat, which was not that common at the time. This is further proof that they were members of the ruling class.
Tak i tento moment nám naznačuje, že máme co dočinit opravdu s tou nejvyšší společenskou vrstvou.
Although the Great Moravian Empire ceased to exist at the beginning of the 10th century, new graves continued to appear at the burial site at Uherské Hradiště Sady for centuries to follow, when the region came in the hands of the Přemyslid dynasty. Experts from the Moravian Museum in Brno are planning to continue with their research, focusing on other burial sites in Moravia as well as at Prague Castle, to see if they can find any links between the Přemyslids and the Great Moravians.
And that was Ruth Frankova reporting in a story which was first broadcast on March 19th this year. If you have any comments about today's programme, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We will be glad to hear from you. But that is all for now from me, Tom McEncrow. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.